It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Fiona's Fury. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard. Hurricane Fiona is the season's first major hurricane. A Cat 3 and growing. With maximum sustained winds of 115 miles per hour, it's tearing up Turks and Caicos right now after causing significant damage in the Dominican. The Weather Channel's Jim Cantore.
The Turks and Caicos, they are dealing with the worst of the weather with the hurricane warnings. Certainly this thing has now made its way to major hurricane, so it's intensifying. The good news is they're really taking the western side of the storm. So if you're going to be in a hurricane, that's not such a bad place to be.
Millions are powerless in the Caribbean. Three have died. Some areas of Puerto Rico got 30 inches of rain. That's where we find correspondent David Begno.
There has been catastrophic flooding and mudslides, down trees and power lines. Brown flood water flowed in all directions, seemingly swallowing everything in its path.
Reporter Gabe Gutierrez.
From the air, staggering images of entire towns underwater, people on rooftops desperately waiting for help. The scope of the disaster still not fully known, since rescuers are still trying to reach remote areas.
The storm comes 5 years to the day that Hurricane Maria killed 3,000 in Puerto Rico. Fiona poses no threat to the U.S. mainland, but will remain a hurricane into this coming weekend when it slams the coast of Canada. Now to a political storm that's brewing. Election day is 7 weeks from today, and a new Fox News poll shows if the election were today, Republicans would gain 13 seats in the House while the Senate remains too close to call. Josh Kroshauer with Axios.
When we talked about the midterms a few months ago, it looked like a Category 4 hurricane that was going to wipe out the Democratic Party's majorities in both the House and the Senate. It now looks like a Category 1 storm. It's still a good environment for Republicans. What's holding the party back is, number one, some weaker than expected nominees for the Senate, and also they have the abortion issue that's energized Democrats.
Now to the border issue. A Texas sheriff has opened up a criminal probe into how migrants got from Florida to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. Democrat Javier Salazar is sheriff of Bexar County near San Antonio.
To just be exploited and hoodwinked into making this trip to Florida and then onward to Martha's Vineyard for what I believe to be nothing more than political posturing to make a point.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says more than 2 million illegal immigrants have crossed the southern border since Joe Biden became president.
You've had migrants die in the Rio Grande, yet 50 die in Texas in a trailer. Was there a freak out about that? No, there wasn't. It's only when 50 get put into Martha's Vineyard. They said they wanted this, but that was all virtue signaling, and not only did I not welcome them, they deported them the next day with the National Guard. Give me a break.
DeSantis says the migrants flown to Martha's Vineyard were homeless and hungry before boarding those charter flights. Also, he says, each was given the opportunity to take the trip or remain at the border. Dr. Anthony Fauci is contradicting President Biden's view that the COVID pandemic is over with.
Fauci, the chief White House medical advisor, says we are not where we need to be if we are going to live with the virus. His comment followed a remark the president made Sunday night in a 60 Minutes interview on CBS.
We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it, but the pandemic is over.
Dr. Fauci, in a fireside chat Monday night with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says it's unlikely the U.S. will eradicate COVID, not with just 67% of our population vaccinated. He also warned that a suspicious new COVID variant is on the horizon this fall.
That's Sarah Lee Kessler reporting. The UN General Assembly in session today, and for the first time in 3 years, world leaders are meeting in person in Lower Manhattan. Climate change is on the mind of Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We need to save our planet, which is quite literally on fire.
Florida Congressman Michael Waltz says the world body's fixated on climate change, and he says President Biden needs to focus on other issues when he addresses the UN tomorrow.
We need some clarity in terms of Russia. Their sanctions regime, I don't think, is working very well. China is stepping in to replace everything that the Europeans aren't buying with Russia. And we're on the verge of an economic crisis in Europe with Russia turning off the gas.
Russia recently requested military aid from China as it loses ground in Ukraine. China's Xi Jinping not in attendance at the UN General Assembly. New Russian horrors have been unearthed in Ukraine, evidence now of torture chambers in communities once controlled by Putin's army. Reporter Deborah Pata toured a police station in eastern Ukraine today, and what she saw is hard to put into words.
The dark, damp basement, previously used as an underground police shooting range.
It was already soundproof. That meant that screams would be muffled, and around you see the things that they left behind, deadly weapons of terror.
Investigators have testimony from victims that these were wielded as implements of torture.
We can see here some kind of wooden bat and masks that we understand were used to asphyxiate victims during periods of intense torture.
Unused electric shock devices also found in that abandoned police station there in eastern Ukraine. The House Oversight Committee votes today on a resolution that would force President Biden to hand over documents about his son Hunter's business dealings. Kentucky Congressman James Comer.
This is going to be a very difficult vote for the Democrats in the hypocrisy category. Just think about all the time the Democrats on the Oversight Committee and in Congress have spent investigating Trump's children when they never had any concrete facts. What we have with Hunter Biden are facts.
Republicans want an investigation into Hunter Biden's alleged influence peddling with countries like China. He's accused of money laundering, tax fraud, and unlawful lobbying. The president on 60 Minutes earlier this week.
I love my son, number one, and no, there's not a single thing that I've observed at all that would affect me or the United States relative to my son Hunter.
32 Senate Republicans requesting the Attorney General appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Hunter Biden. Keeping big tech in check. A federal judge has ruled that companies like Facebook, Twitter, and Google have no freewheeling right to censor speech on their media platforms. Jonathan Turley is a law professor at George Washington University.
This is a really tough case because corporations do have free speech rights. And what these social media companies are saying is that we have a right to censor. And it's unfortunate because it's gotten worse each year.
The ruling, a victory for conservatives who have complained for years that their opinions are being squashed by the social media giants. The case expected to go to the U.S. Supreme Court eventually. The Brits are back at work and school following the state funeral of the Queen. Reporter Vicky Barker takes a look at the road ahead for the king.
This was a sentiment you heard a lot during yesterday's monumental ceremonies for Queen Elizabeth.
I don't think I've ever seen the like of this again. She was very, very special.
How can the oldest heir ever to assume the British throne possibly live up to the achievements of its longest reigning monarch? We won't start seeing the answer today. All the royals are observing a further week of mourning for their matriarch.
Vicky Barker reporting from London. Still to come on the Noon Report, roundabouts save lives, promoting life in Pennsylvania, and some phone issues in Chautauqua County.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're keeping an eye on a strong cold front that'll bring some hefty thunderstorms later tomorrow and some very cool air in its wake come Thursday, the first official day of autumn. Forecast details are coming up in 10.
All right, bring on fall. Thank you, Kevin. And news where you live next will begin in Chautauqua County, New York, where the landlines are down today. The sheriff of Chautauqua County says it has to do with a communications glitch at a Buffalo-based company. Those outages apparently first occurred last night. Cell phones, we're told, still working, but the landlines are not in Chautauqua County. No word yet on when the phone service might be restored. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is promising assistance for storm-wrecked Puerto Rico, which took a direct hit from Hurricane Fiona.
Fiona is the largest storm to hit since Maria in 2017, and Puerto Rico has sustained significant damage.
More than a million Puerto Ricans are powerless today after the U.S. territory got pummeled with 30 inches of rain and 90-mile-per-hour winds.
And so the island is drenched, and because of this heavy volume, the National Weather Service predicts that there will be catastrophic flooding that will occur over the next 3 days, with potential for landslides and mudslides.
New York sent a utility crews to the island and has dispatched 100 Spanish-speaking state troopers to assist there in Puerto Rico. Young students were among the thousands of people who showed up yesterday at the March for Life in Harrisburg, the first march of its kind since the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade. Bethany Lane at Calvary Christian Academy says when she heard that news,
I almost cried. Like, I was so happy that, you know, we have this opportunity now.
Lane says the fight to protect life goes beyond the unborn.
We should support them after they're born.
While the pro-lifers were marching outside the Capitol, pro-choice politicians were inside, renewing their effort to expand abortion access in the Commonwealth.
This continued attack against my rights, against our rights, sickens me.
Many are now framing the midterms in less than 50 days as a battle over abortion. Republican gubernatorial candidate Doug Mastriano.
We are still talking about life. It's the single most important issue, I think, in our lifetime. And so Pennsylvania, we're at a crossroads.
Abortion is still legal in Pennsylvania up to 6 months of pregnancy. Mastriano's vowed to change that if he is elected governor. A woman has died after crashing her car into a home in Bath, New York. Police say 48-year-old Arissa Mangini experienced a medical emergency of some kind. This woman was first on the scene and told Family Life News today,
I tried to see if I could find the driver, so I had to cut out one of the airbags because I couldn't see her, and she was pretty out of it.
Mangini was extricated from the vehicle and taken to a local hospital with only minor injuries, but she died unexpectedly later in the evening. An autopsy will determine the exact cause of death. PennDOT says roundabouts save lives. The circular intersections are helping to reduce traffic crashes, fatalities, and injuries throughout Pennsylvania.
Roundabouts are, on the whole, safer than traditional intersections on busy roads. According to PennDOT, total number of crashes at these intersections is down by 9%. Suspected serious injuries reduced by 76%.
WNEP's Scott Schaefer. The first roundabout, by the way, was built in Pennsylvania back in 2005. The family of a Utah Little Leaguer is suing Little League Baseball in South Williamsport over an incident last month that nearly claimed that child's life.
On August 15th, during the Little League World Series, 12-year-old Easton Oliverson fell from his bunk bed and fractured his skull. Now the boy's parents are taking legal action against Little League Baseball and the company that made the bed. They accused the youth sports organization in Williamsport of negligence for failing to equip the upper bunk beds with rails to protect ball players. Oliverson continues to receive treatment at a Salt Lake City hospital. In addition to undergoing emergency surgery to relieve swelling on his brain, the boy is also experiencing multiple infections and has started having seizures on a daily basis. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
I wish that young lad all the best. Thank you very much, Brandon. It is now coming up on 14 past the hour. Your midday sports is next, right here on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Buffalo Bills dominated the Tennessee Titans last night in Orchard Park 41-7. Josh Allen, pure dynamite, tossing 317 yards and 4 touchdown passes. And his connection to Stephon Diggs, nothing short of electric. Diggs caught 12 passes for 148 yards and 3 of those touchdowns. On the defensive side, Matt Milano had a 43-yard pick 6. The Bills also had another interception as well. The only downside to the game was a serious neck injury to cornerback Dane Jackson. He was taken off the field in an ambulance. There is good news, though. Jackson had full movement of his extremities. Well, like Buffalo, the Eagles are off to a 2-0 start after Philadelphia cruised past the Vikings 24-7. Jalen Hurts threw for 333 yards and a score, also ran it in twice for touchdowns. The Vikings now 1-1 on the season. On to baseball and Mad Max. Scherzer was perfect through 6 innings last night, striking out 9, and then he was pulled from his start. Scherzer was making his first start in 16 days, so New York only let him throw 68 pitches. So he threw a perfect game. It was just for 6 innings. More importantly, though, the Mets' Pete Alonso hit a 3-run home run, and the Amazons won the game 7-2. The Braves remain one game back as they beat Washington 5-2. Marlins, Giants, and Dodgers also won. Over in the American League, Cleveland beat the Twins 11-4. Seattle won easily over the Angels 9-1. Houston shut out Tampa Bay 4-0. And the Tigers clobbered Baltimore 11-0. That is a look at sports.
Thank you, Randy Mann. Still to come on the Noon Report, migrant mayhem at Martha's Vineyard. 7 weeks to go till Election Day, and Dome Homes in the Berg.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. I'm John Stonestreet. As the midterm elections loom, both pro-abortion candidates and the Democratic Party in whole, not always for the same reasons, have been working to advance abortion rights and access as a central issue or the central issue in November. Increasingly, 3 common myths are touted by abortion advocates and pro-abortion media sources. First, that abortion is healthcare. Second, that ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages will be treated as abortion in a post-Roe society. And 3, that the abortion pill is safe. Now, to counter these myths, as well as a few others, the American Association for Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or APLOG, has launched a campaign to put fact sheets into the hands of medical professionals. The information is vital, not only to prevent patients from being misled, but also as a public statement of solidarity from pro-life doctors and nurses. Abortion is essential health care. Now, sometimes all it takes to misrepresent truth is an adjective, or in this case, a missing adjective. While in certain rare and tragic situations, a sick preborn child can put the mother's life at risk, that kind of essential health care does not justify the vast majority of abortions that are elective. And that word elective is missing in the statement. Abortion is essential healthcare. OBGYNs are trained to recognize whenever life-giving medical intervention is necessary for pregnant mothers. In these heartbreaking cases, medical professionals are working to save the mother. In elective abortions, medical professionals are working to kill the child. That's not healthcare. And according to APLOG, 93% of OBGYNs don't provide elective abortions because most entered the field to help women care for their preborn babies, not to take their lives. And they're able to tell the difference. And a second myth that's addressed by the APLOG fact sheet is that women with ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages will not receive the care they need because of these new laws. But each of those situations are categorically different than elective abortions. An ectopic pregnancy occurs when a fertilized egg implants outside of the uterus. In these cases, the baby will not survive no matter what the doctors do. As Alexandra DeSantis has written, none of the legislation in any of the 50 states eliminate care for ectopic pregnancies or miscarriages. Doctors who would refuse care for an ectopic pregnancy or a miscarriage are simply misinterpreting their state's laws. And to claim otherwise is just patently false. A third myth that the APLOG fact sheet repudiates is that chemical abortions are a safe and convenient option for women. Last December, the Food and Drug Administration extended their pandemic policies that mail order chemical abortions be made available without ever requiring a patient to meet with a medical professional in person. Look, even if there were not the very clear ethical problem of taking a human life, abortion medication is meant to be used before 10 weeks of pregnancy. If a woman is not required to see a medical professional, there is no way to confirm just how far along the pregnancy is. And the farther along it is, the more risk there is to the mother.
Everyone who cares about building a culture of life has to be clear on these facts about abortion and women's health. APLOG's website includes counters to six other abortion myths in addition to these three. And I'm pleased to announce that Alexandra DeSantis will be speaking at our next Lighthouse Voices series on her book, Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Our Culture and Disadvantages Women. It'll be at 7 p.m. Central Time on October the 4th. You can join either live if you live near Holland, Michigan, or on live stream. To register, just go to focusonthefamily.com/lighthousevoices. That's focusonthefamily.com/lighthousevoices. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
It's coming up on 20 past the hour. You know what that means? Kevin Williams time.
Here is your family life weather forecast. For this afternoon, we're looking at a decent amount of sunshine, some mixed patchy clouds, and a spot shower in central New York. High temperatures 70s, dropping tonight into the 50s. For tomorrow, warmer, partly sunny, more humid, breezy. High temps near 80. Showers and thunderstorms will arrive from northwest to southeast tomorrow afternoon and evening, and they could be locally strong. Thursday, much cooler. Lots of clouds, a couple of showers, and high temperatures in the upper 50s to the upper 60s.
All right, time to find those sweatshirts and jackets, folks. It's nearly here. This is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price. Here's what's happening Tuesday, the 20th of September, Election Day, 7 weeks from today. And a brand new Fox News poll shows if the election were today, Republicans would gain a 13-seat advantage in the House. The U.S. Senate, still up in the air. I talked about that with Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson, who predicts Republicans will win that too.
For that to happen, you'd probably have to keep the seat that Toomey's leaving. And right now, that one's really close. Do you trust the polls? Some have Fetterman way up, some have it really close. Trafalgar yesterday had it like a point and a half difference. How are you reading the polls there on the Oz-Fetterman race?
Well, Trafalgar is probably one of the best polls to look at. But here's the thing. Can anybody tell me the last time a pollster's been correct? To me, it's what's on the ground. What is the enthusiasm?
7 weeks till today. It's Election Day. Congressman G.T. Thompson on with us today. Congressman, many are framing this midterm as a battle over abortion in Pennsylvania, especially. Of course, we had that huge March for Life that was attended by thousands yesterday. How much will abortion politics factor into the race in Pennsylvania this year?
Well, Bob, I'm proud to say I was one of those thousands that were there. I think there's people that pro-life at their heart, but maybe we're kind of wore out and beat up because we've been living with Roe v. Wade for decades, right? I think these folks, the enthusiasm with them has been ignited because they see that based on the Dodds ruling and the repeal of Roe v. Wade, they see a path forward, and their enthusiasm on the pro-life side has stepped up.
Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson speaking to Family Life News today. Hurricane Fiona gaining strength in the South Atlantic. It's tearing through Turks and Caicos right now after pummeling parts of Puerto Rico. Forecaster Dave Parkinson is tracking the storm.
It is possible that we could be nearing Category 4 strength as the storm makes a direct run at Bermuda sometime during Thursday night as well as Friday.
This storm comes 5 years to the day that Hurricane Maria killed 3,000 in Puerto Rico. A sheriff in Texas has opened up a criminal probe into dozens of Venezuelan migrants flown from San Antonio to Florida and then on to Martha's Vineyard off the coast of Massachusetts. Democrat Javier Salazar claims the illegals were lured onto those planes under false pretenses.
Somebody coming and preying upon people that are here minding their own business and are here legally, but somebody saw fit to come from another state, hunt them down, prey upon them, and then take advantage of their desperate situation just for the sake of political theater.
That somebody is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who claims Democrats are disingenuous when it comes to these migrants.
Here's the thing. They said they didn't have housing. They said they couldn't accommodate. Like, let's just say that's true for a minute. Well, what does that mean for these poor towns in Texas? What does it mean for these other places across the country that are seeing influx? What does it mean to these small towns that Biden has dumped so many people in?
The number of illegal border crossings this year has surpassed 2 million, the most most of any year on record. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham is defending his call for a national abortion ban at 15 weeks of pregnancy.
This is not a states' rights issue. This is a human right issue. At 15 weeks, a baby sucks its thumb.
Graham says it is reprehensible that states are even entertaining the idea of allowing abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy.
California is adopting Chinese abortion policy, and I do not believe federalism requires me to sit on the sidelines and watch a baby at 30 weeks, 28 weeks be dismembered. I will not do that.
Every Democrat in the U.S. Senate recently voted to allow taxpayer-funded abortions up to the moment of birth.
I am proudly pro-life. There's no shame in being pro-life. The shame here is to have policies in America like China and North Korea, and I will fight with my last breath to keep this country from being a nation that would abort a baby up to the moment of birth.
47 European countries, by the way, ban abortions below the 15-week threshold. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin says he is standing up for parental rights, even as he faces backlash for signing a law that rolls back the influence of transgenderism in the public schools.
This is about restoring power to parents. And let's just be clear. Children do not belong to the state. They belong to families. And when a child is wrestling with this kind of decision, a parent should absolutely be the primary counselor, advisor, and helper in wrestling with this decision.
The new policy, which takes effect next month, requires students in Virginia to use the bathroom that matches their sex at birth. Students in Virginia also prohibited from changing their name or gender unless legally approved by a parent. It's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Welcome back to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Mark Webster, and this week's guest is Jessica Sheary of Operation Christmas Child. She's a media relations volunteer in the West Central Pennsylvania region.
How did you wind up getting involved with this?
My mom started packing shoeboxes with her church in 2004, and I saw her heart and her passion for this ministry, and it sparked my own. It started out small. I would just donate filler items, you know, like the hygiene, the school supplies, you know, the small toys. But then it morphed over time. You know, I saw my mom's passion and heart for this ministry growing. Mine did as well. And, you know, I became active in the church's packing party. And then I started packing my own boxes. And in fall 2019, you know, I found myself heartbroken because I could only pack 2 shoebox gifts. And I wanted to give so much more. And that's when God opened up the door for me to serve with the ministry and give to the ministry in a different way as a media support volunteer.
And this is probably more than just a right around Christmas time activity for you then.
Yes, it's a year-round commitment. This is an army of volunteers, not just in our area, but nationally and even globally.
For those who aren't too familiar with Operation Christmas Child, what's it all about?
Anyone can pack a shoebox. It doesn't even have to be one of our ministry's pre-printed shoeboxes. You can take any shoebox. I love the quote. It's so much more than packing toys and packing, you know, hygiene items. You know, we're packing the tangible representation of God's love. It's always been my goal and my heart that when they do that countdown from 3 and the children rip off those lids, that they don't just see and experience the joy of, for many, their first gift, but they feel an explosion of hope in God's love. It's reaching the ends of the earth with the gospel message. Many of these countries that receive shoebox gifts, less than 3%, you know, have ever heard the gospel message or heard the name Jesus Christ. They don't know that there's a God out there that loves them. For many, you know, they get to hear the gospel message for the first time. And these are children that have hit rock bottom. They're in the darkest areas of the earth. Many of them are orphans. They feel unheard, unseen, forgotten. And then all of a sudden, they get a red and green shoebox gift from Operation Christmas Child, and they feel love for the first time. They feel wanted, and they're just amazed that there's a stranger on the other end of the world who loves them. And, you know, they feel the love from a complete stranger as well as the love of their father.
It's often been said that giving of gifts does more for the giver than it does for the recipient.
Mm-hmm. This is my heart, my passion. It's my mom. mom's legacy. She got me into this ministry. She helped spark the love and the passion for this ministry in me. And we lost her to ALS February 12, 2021. I could have went into a place of despair, but it sparked an even greater love for this ministry, an even greater passion for this ministry. I want to give to this ministry more and more in her memory and in her honor, and also pass down that love for this ministry to her grandchildren. And it's exciting for me to see the grandchildren. It's a great way to get children involved in missions and encourage them to think about others their own age in need around the world. I'm actively, you know, seeking greater ways to serve with this ministry. In December, I will spend a week in a processing center where we lay hands and pray on every single box that will go through the processing center. God's a big God, so I believe that He is going to use me to do even greater things with this ministry. I'm excited for the doors He's opening for me. Like I said, it's my heart, it's my passion, and it's been neat. I have connections to the other end of the shoebox now, and I love to hear the stories of the other end. Social media is great. I conversed in the spring after our Connect conference with a woman from the Philippines, and she just wanted to say thank you for being a part of this ministry. She and her children drove an hour in a pickup truck on rugged roads in the Philippines and then walked another hour to get to their shoebox outreach event. And I just thought, for someone to just crave and yearn for hope and for love and to hear the gospel message, I mean, that to me, it was very inspiring.
That's Jessica Sherry, a media relations volunteer in the West Central Pennsylvania region for Operation Christmas Child. Join us again next time as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
Love that feature. Thank you, Mark. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Today we're between cold fronts. The one that came through yesterday with thunderstorms and showers is past. Another out of Canada is on the way. It'll bring thunderstorms that could pack a wallop later tomorrow afternoon and evening. And then the coolest air of the season to date awaits behind the front come Thursday and Friday, the first couple days of official autumn. For this afternoon, we're looking at a decent amount of sunshine, some mixed patchy clouds, and a spot shower in central New York. High temperatures 70s, dropping tonight into the 50s. But tomorrow, warmer, partly sunny, more humid, breezy. High temps near 80. Showers and thunderstorms will arrive from northwest to southeast tomorrow afternoon and evening, and they could be locally strong. Thursday, much cooler. Lots of clouds, a couple of showers, and high temperatures in the upper 50s to the upper 60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. And finally at noon, they are called Dome Homes, and they've helped a Pittsburgh-area college student win a national award.
Christian Duckworth is eyeing a potential solution to house the homeless with foldable dome homes, and his idea to build these collapsible dome-shaped homes has earned him a $10,000 Build a Better Future scholarship. Duckworth has served meals and helped with renovations at Light of Life Rescue Mission in Pittsburgh's North Side to become an Eagle Scout. His dome-shaped homes would be 254 square feet, but fold down to cubes measuring only 8.5 feet to allow for easy transportation. They would also include a bathroom, kitchen, loft space, air conditioning, and solar panels to power the lights. The foldable dome homes could be used for disaster relief also. Duckworth is a freshman studying architecture at Pittsburgh's Carnegie Mellon University and hopes to continue pursuing his dome home project in the coming years. Brian Quarry, Family Life News.
All right, Brian, love that story. Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us today. Our time is up. That's Our World Tuesday, the 20th of September. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.